And so there was no deviation which we need to explain. In terms of the next target we had, it was that 5 provincial departments of health must demonstrate improvements in audit outcomes with no significant matters for the year the target was set for, which is 18-19 performance year. And then, unfortunately, yeah, only 2 of the 5 provinces demonstrated improvements. And the reason why the other 3 didn't demonstrate improvement is because Eastern Cape and Mpumalanga had disqualifications on contingent liabilities, and the Free State was qualified because the auditor was unable to confirm that goods and services had indeed been received and accounted for. Then our next target was really to implement a claim management system in all our 9 provinces, but only 6 provinces, not all provinces implemented, only 3 did, and so we had a deviation of 6 provinces that did not manage to implement. And this was largely due to delays in capturing data and data cleaning in some of the provincial departments of health. Next slide, please. So there are some performance improvement strategies that would need to be put in place for this program. And that is to, on a continuous basis, provide the support we have been to the provincial departments through the development primarily of audit improvement plans that addresses the audit findings that they receive, and to ensure that internal controls are then strengthened and or put in place and or maintained. And also to continue with the rollout of the case management system to the remaining provinces in order to ensure that we reduce our medical legal claims and manage the risk of unnecessary expenditure in that regard. Our next program is the National Health Insurance Program. This program, I'm just presenting some of the highlights that were achieved in this program. One of them related to stock availability, medicine stock availability, where they exceeded their target. And this was largely due to the procurement of hardware and software for health facilities in various provinces, so they could better use the system. And then we also had, in the 2019-20 fiscal year, more than 3.3 million patients registered in the centralized chronic medicines dispensing and distribution program. And these are received at various pickup points. So this was the achievement against a target of 3 million, well exceeding the target, and hence highlighted here. Then another highlight is that 3,059 PHC facilities implemented the HPRS system, which is the Health Patient Registration System, and at the end of the financial year under review, we had more than 45 million people registered in our patient registry using the HPRS. Then I go now to the actual achievements target by target against the indicators and strategic objectives. I will also, in the interest of time, try to dwell not too much on what we have actually achieved, but because I've highlighted those key achievements up front, but I'd like to point out where we had deviations. So we had to have, as our target, we had to achieve a proclamation of the NHS Act. However, while the bill was tabled in Parliament, the Act had not been proclaimed because the bill was under review for a longer period than what we necessarily anticipated initially. We also had to establish our NHI office with key positions filled as a key target we had set for the year. Whilst we developed the organogram, the office could however not be established and positions filled because this can only happen once the bill is passed into law. We also had to have a comprehensive package of district health services developed with a view to accelerating implementation of the NHI. However, this was achieved. We did develop the package, and so there's no deviations. And then we also had to have contracting teams trained for accelerated implementation of the NHI. Now here, we had to have 33 officials, and we had actually set ourselves targets for each of the levels of care. However, the achievement did not match the target precisely, but we did have people capacitated based on how we agreed with the National Health Council that we will focus first on training the executive and the HODs and some senior members through study tours to Thailand, Turkey, and the United Kingdom. Next slide, please. Yeah, we achieved our target of having health facilities reporting stock availability. In fact, we exceeded the target of 3725 by 47 health facilities reporting stock availability at the surveillance center. And whilst there was some underperformance by hospitals, this overall target was made up by other levels of care and also by the fact that other sites were brought on board and helped us to achieve our overall target and in fact exceed it. With regards to the early warning system for medicine stockout, we've also achieved that target. Our next indicator is against the strategic objective of eliminating medicine stockouts. Here we also exceeded the target where 25 facilities were supposed to be automated with e-prescription and e-dispensing systems, and we exceeded that with 11 facilities. Then we had to also implement a electronic medicine catalog, which we duly did, managed to achieve. Then we have another strategic objective, which now focuses on improving contracting and supply of medicines through innovative service delivery models. And the planned target of having 3 million patients enrolled for receiving medicines through the CCMDD program was exceeded. And this, I just would like to highlight here to honorable members that this program has proven to be very popular, and some patients even really come demanding to be registered on the program, which is a very good thing. Then, we move next to the use of antibiotics and ensuring that we minimize antimicrobial resistance. To this end, we plan to put in a surveillance system to monitor antimicrobial resistance, and that this system had to be accessible to 6 of the departments. This was indeed achieved, which is a huge stride towards reducing antimicrobial resistance. Then we also needed to create our NHI beneficiary registry. And here the planned target, as I alluded to in the highlights, we exceeded by more than 160. We had 161 facilities and 17 hospitals who actually were maintaining the system. And we also then had an additional 30 hospitals, which we wanted to have implement the patient registration system. However, only 28 was implementing it by the end of the financial year. And the reasons for the deviations was that firstly, 10 primary healthcare facilities closed during the reporting period. So there was also major challenges with procurement of the hardware. And in Mpumalanga, there were also some delays in implementation. And we also had delays in importing the information from the SASSA database. And then synchronizing this with our own systems. So to improve performance on some of the key weaknesses for this area or program, we will ensure that public hearing proceeds and that the NHI bill gets moved along through the respective committees in Parliament. The proposed organogram for the NDOH as well as the NHI office was prepared and submitted to DPSA. And we also have local training of district teams on NHI. The teams that have been trained will resume once the COVID crisis is over. The next program is communicable diseases. And here, our main achievements related to clearing the backlogs in radiation oncology through strategic purchasing of services, as well as retraining community health workers in the revised scope of work, where we achieved almost 30,000 against a target of 20,000. And largely this was enabled through PEPFAR support. In terms of reducing child mortality, our target was to ensure that we publish the survey report of the EPI program. And the survey report was unfortunately not published, but much work had been done on it. The initial data was also used to put in place mechanisms to strengthen the program. Then EPI surveillance. Our target was that 6 provincial trainings had to be conducted to implement the external review, and these happened. In terms of reducing maternal mortality and neonatal mortality, we had a target of 11 regional hospitals which had to be implementing the improvement program for pregnant women and neonates, and this was achieved, which is very good, given that we always struggle with reducing neonatal mortality against our other indicators. With regards to implementation of combination prevention and treatment interventions to reduce TB, STIs, and HIV infections, we managed to achieve against detecting new TB patients. So our incidence improved with more than 3,000 against the target. But with male medical circumcisions, we underperformed by 68,000. And this is largely due to the fact that the main funder, which was USAID through PEPFAR, prematurely terminated the contract of the prime partner who was doing the circumcisions. Then with regards to disease prevention and health promotion, we overachieved, so I'm not going to dwell on that. So we have done very well with our screening and testing campaign, and this was contributed to by the Cienza project and the Tuma projects, which are just really projects aimed at strengthening work in the key districts where prevalence and incidence is highest. In terms of improving access to community-based primary healthcare services, here we achieved our first target, which was the retraining of the community health workers, as alluded to in the highlights. But in terms of tracing clients, the community health workers did not manage to achieve their target, and in fact fell short by more than half of the target, which was 1 million clients traced. And the reason for this really is that only the TB and HIV clients were actually traced, because they were the community health workers were given their details. Unfortunately, details for patients enrolled in antenatal care, immunization, and these other services, the appointment lists, which shows the missed appointments, were not generated and handed to community health workers to trace them. The next activity or target was to have two districts where community health workers use the mobile app to register households. Unfortunately, we only, the target was 27, but we only had two districts who achieved it. And this was again due to lack of funding, in that PEPFAS funds came late to start this program. Our next target was against maintaining our steady progress towards elimination of malaria through developing implementation plans for the five key provinces where we have endemic and non-endemic cases still, and this was achieved. The next target was to have 50% of the National Action Plan activities implemented as recommended by the Joint Evaluation Committee of the International Health Regulations Committee, the Joint Committee on International Health Regulations. This was achieved, and largely because of the way the team worked in a very collaborative and intersectoral way. With regards to mental health objectives, here we managed to set targets. Unfortunately, we didn't do very well on our mental health services, as can be seen in the deviation from the planned target. They all show negative signs, which means that the targets were not achieved. So with regards to contracting of psychiatrists and psychologists, this didn't happen, and this resulted in no work done. So none of the targets were achieved. The same one for the same applies to the forensic mental observations, and this really had to do with the supply chain management requirements, where the those who applied didn't meet the supply chain management requirements. Then against the strengthening of the district health mental services, we also wanted to ensure that 20 districts had mental health teams established. Here we fell short with three teams, and provinces are incrementally working to establish these teams with the available resources where they were not established. Next slide. Now we move to expansion of the provision of rehab services to people with physical disabilities. We did very well here in that we achieved our target of having multidisciplinary teams established. Then, as I highlighted earlier, we actually overachieved on reducing our backlogs with radiation oncology. Next slide, please, Julie. So in terms of addressing some of our key challenges here, we did complete eventually the final report on the immunization coverage survey. With regard to MMC, a transversal contract was expanded to include the 10 to 14 year olds, and the transversal contract was also expanded to in the 27 non-PEPFAR supported districts from 3 to 12 districts to ensure that there was sufficient capacity. We also brought in surgical aid to ensure mass circumcisions and to eliminate adverse events unnecessarily. The contracting of health professionals on the NHI indirect grant for mental health services, including forensic mental health services, will in future be decentralized to provincial departments of health and hopefully that intervention will help improve the performance. Then we move to our program four, which is the primary health care program. Here there are a few highlights where we can highlight some good achievements, and that is our ideal clinic service program, where we had 1,906 facilities obtaining ideal clinic status in this program against a target of 1,800. And this gets done, as members are aware, through peer reviews and peer review updates. And based on the success of this ideal clinic program, we also introduced the ideal hospital framework to drive quality improvements in hospitals. And this framework is aligned, as was the ideal clinic framework, to the regulated national core standards. The emergency services also had very good achievements in that they provided oversight and services during the national elections, also during the presidential inauguration, and assisted with medical relief efforts in Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe during the floods. And they also provided relief efforts in the flood which affected the Eastern Cape, the Free State, and KwaZulu-Natal. In terms of performance, we achieved our target of developing plans for 30 district structures to ensure that they meet the minimum requirements of the District Health Management Office structure guidelines. And with regards to the National Health Amendment Bill, the target was, the indicator actually is that the National Health Act needed to be reviewed and the functions with regards to environmental health needed to be, with regards to the district health system and the district health management office needed to be clearly amended. The actual achievement, now Tuli, can you go back please? The actual achievement for this was that the functions of the District Health Management Office were not amended in the National Health Act Amendment Bill, because the incorporation of the functions will only be finalized after the amendment bill on NHI has been on health has been enacted. Next slide. Now we move to strengthening governance and improving leadership of the district health system. Here we had a total of 345 primary health care facility committees which needed to be trained based on the handbook for governance structures. And the handbook for governance structures needed to be thus implemented. Unfortunately, we did not achieve our target. We fell short of our target by 625 facilities against the 970 planned committees trained. In terms of hospital boards, here we managed to achieve our target. So we just need to strengthen our work on the community health clinic committees. Next slide, please, Tuli. This relates to improving quality of services and quality of care in health facilities. So we view the Ideal Clinic Initiative, as I said, as a quality improvement initiative, which we've exceeded our target and done very well on. The next target of 45% of 3,400 clinics or facilities should be accessible to people with disabilities. Here we only fell short by our target, reaching our target by -4, which means only 4% was not achieved. And this was due to facilities being closed for either renovation or permanently closed. And at the same time, also during the last quarter, peer review activities on inspections with or on assessments were suspended due to COVID. The next objective still focuses on quality, and this requires that 254 hospitals had to do baseline assessments using the ideal hospital framework, and that was achieved. We also had to submit our traditional health practitioners amendment bill to Parliament to commence the parliamentary process, but unfortunately this was not achieved due to the delay in feedback from our state law advisors on the bill. Next slide, please. It's still continuing with quality. Here, our performance indicator is to have a national guideline on patient experience of care survey, and the target was to have the existing approved survey guideline reviewed, which unfortunately was not achieved due to delays in consultation processes. In terms of improving the chronic care for our users, based on user feedback, our target was to have 1 million chronic patients providing feedback on the services they received using the Patient Satisfaction Assessment app. Here we managed to only achieve 4,559 patients providing feedback, because it was really not full implementation for the year under review, but more using those who managed to provide feedback to achieve a proof of concept, which was only implemented in 388 facilities and not our more than 4,000 facilities in the country. Next slide, please. Honourable members, we move now to environmental health, where I already became confused earlier with thinking we'd already moved there. Now here, our strategic objective is really to improve environmental health services in 52 districts and in our metropolitan municipalities in our country. We did not manage to achieve our planned target, which was to have sections of the National Health Act and Environmental Health Act drafted. But however, the actual achievement was that a draft framework was developed, and the reason why we didn't achieve it was due to our focus on COVID preparedness during the third quarter. In terms of ports of entry that are compliant with the International Health 2000 regulations of 2005, core capacity requirements, our planned target was to have 20 ports of entry meeting these requirements, but at the end of the day, we only had 10 points of entry or ports of entry achieving the target. And this again was due to the COVID-19 pandemic, where key port health personnel were redirected to respond to the outbreak where outbreaks had started, and action plans were thus not fully implemented, which accounts for this underperformance. Then in terms of our next target, we wanted to have our major healthcare risk waste generating facilities in place, and our target was to have 78 of them. We exceeded that target, which was very well done by the environmental health team. And our next target was to have 31 out of 52 municipalities selected and audited against the environmental health norms and standards. But we managed to achieve only one, and the one which we didn't achieve actually had been audited in the previous year, which makes it not that big of a train smash. Next slide, please. Honourable members, we move to emergency services. And our plan target was to have all 9 provinces being monitored for compliance with the emergency services regulations by using this approved checklist, which our team had developed. All 9 provinces had to develop improvement plans for EMS. And this was very well achieved. Then the ideal emergency service framework had to be developed. And it had to be in compliance with the emergency service regulations, and this was also duly achieved, honorable members. Next slide. So in terms of improvements here, we need to continue to move the National Health Act along, this will only be able to happen once the National Health Insurance Bill has been enacted. The work on primary healthcare facility committees needs to be completed. The Traditional Practitioners Amendment Bill must also be resubmitted to the state law advisors and final feedback obtained. And closure of health facilities for renovation is sometimes necessary, as certain structural renovation requires that day-to-day operations cease temporarily while these projects are ongoing. The compliance of these facilities will thus have to be assessed only when the renovation projects have been completed. And here again, even though sometimes by the time the end of the year came, we might not have been issued with completion certificates, 99% or even more than 80% of the work might have already been done. Then with regards to ports of entry, we need to assess the remaining port of entry, and the revised PEC guidelines need to be tabled at the TEC once concurrence has been achieved that we want to retable the PEC guideline, or we reconsider whether we want to only use the patient satisfaction app, because both of these tools measure patient satisfaction. But that is now our new thinking. In terms of our performance, we had both of these as targets. Next slide, please. Now we move to the hospital systems, which is program 5. Yeah, I wish to highlight that the emergency maintenance works were completed at 4 hospitals, namely Zeerust, Klerksdorp, Mafeking, as well as Ditlabeng hospitals in the Free State. Maintenance work was also completed at 39 facilities, which most of which were primary health clinics, where then there were numerous projects that were started for procurement of new clinics in Mpumalanga, as well as upgrading of theatres and HVAC systems in hospitals. Of the 25 hospitals, 22 were in the northwest, 2 in Gauteng, and 1 in Limpopo. And additional staff was also appointed to the project management office to assist with all infrastructure projects, which has proven to be challenging in the past. So in terms of our achievements here, our target for regional and tertiary hospitals assessed using the ideal hospital framework, here we achieved 61, our planned target was 61, we achieved only 49 because problems still had some challenges using the ideal hospital system tool as well as software. In terms of the next target, we have to have a costed implementation plan for improvement in all our 10 central organizational, in all our central hospitals where all organizational structures had to be completed. Now, here, we only managed to draft the implementation plans for the 10 central hospital organizational structures, but the costing was not done. Next slide, please. year, we aim to have 37% of our facilities compliant with infrastructure norms and standards, which was achieved, and 60 clinics and community health centers constructed or revitalized. Here, we had 41 clinics and community health centers constructed or revitalized against the overall target of 60. Now, 19 projects failed to reach practical completion stage, honorable members, as was projected due to various reasons, but it does not mean no work was done. It simply means that for this target to have been fully achieved, we needed to reach final completion with completion certificate issued, but much work had indeed been achieved. Then, with regards to construction of the hospital in KZN, that was delayed because the practical completion date was extended to 2020-2021 financial year for this Dr. Pixley Kastisemi Hospital in KZN. Then, with regards to facilities maintained, repaired and or refurbished, we had a target of 45, but we achieved only 39. And again, with a 6 which did not reach full completion stage, it does not mean work had not happened on those facilities, honorable members. It just means that we did not reach our final completion, which was our end goal or our end target, and of which the AG required a completion certificate. In terms of hospitals revitalized, we achieved 16 against the 20. And with regards to hospitals maintained, repaired and or refurbished, there we managed to have 100% completion, which is really a good achievement for the team. And this was done through the health facilities revitalization grant in the districts. Next slide, please. Here, in terms of how we're going to improve our performance, honorable members and DM, we're going to look at revising our draft guidelines for central hospitals, and then we will resubmit them to Tech NHC, and finally to NHC in this financial year. All provincial departments of health have also agreed to monitor and report on the ideal hospital status determination as part of the routinely reported information, which is also currently now being implemented in this new financial year. And the revised construction program for health infrastructure problem projects will be more closely monitored and progress will be reported in this year. And the practical completion date for the hospital in KZN, as I said, was extended, and we hope to achieve our target. Next slide, please. In terms of the final program, which we're coming to now, which is program 6, which is our very important program of health system governance and human resources. Why? Because our human resources is our key pillar or our heartbeat of our health system, because health services are provided through people. Here, key highlights is that we managed to develop our new human resource for health strategy in order to ensure that we address our persistent challenges. Whilst we developed the strategy, our final NHC unfortunately did not approve it, but it was approved now this year in the next National Health Council, because the last National Health Council meeting of the previous year unfortunately was redirected to focus only on COVID. Then we had to have a total of 646 Cuban students placed at South African universities for their final year of training, and that is because that was the number of students in their final year in Cuba. All of them were placed, but six had failed. However, we have secured placement for them. And then 100% of our South African medical interns and ComServe personnel who studied at our universities and were thus eligible for allocation and placement were duly allocated and placed by October as per our project plan. And then with regards to our nursing program, we were having some challenges, but through a very collaborative process we put in place between the two accrediting bodies or regulatory councils, the nursing councils, which is our statutory regulatory body in the health sector as per the Act of the Council. And then the Council on Higher Education also has the responsibility to regulate. So we decided to sign service level agreements so that there's not duplication of function and work, and the two bodies have worked very nicely together to ensure that we could achieve our targets of ensuring professional programs in nursing were duly registered. And then we had to develop guidelines on clinical education and training for clinical practice. This was duly achieved, especially for the facilities that or the nursing colleges that had to offer the new programs. And all public colleges have also been reorganized into a single college per province, single provincial colleges with multi-campuses in districts or sub-districts, meaning it's brought closer to where our students are. So that means we now have 10 nursing colleges, the 9 in the provinces, and then the 1 in the military health service. And this enables us to better respond to our national requirements, and it also improves access to public nursing colleges by our local communities, which we think is something to highlight. Next slide, please, Julie. Next slide. Now you must go one back. Honorable members, as you might recall, we had a key target to establish NAPISA as a public entity and to have the board appointed. Unfortunately, this has not happened because the bill lapsed in the National Assembly on the 7th of May. However, subsequently processes have been resurrected and is well on its way. In terms of our target of biannual governance progress reports for all 5 health entities being received and reviewed by the National Department of Health, as well as for the statutory councils, we achieved it. And then we also had a target of developing a departmental handbook for our departmental representatives who serve on entities and on the boards of entities and or on the statutory councils and or their subcommittees and committees. And this handbook is aimed at ensuring that members know their functions and they are able to duly report back to both the line function DDGs as well as to the DG and the Deputy Minister and Minister. The handbook was developed. Unfortunately, it was not implemented because we felt that there was some non-alignment with some of the corporate governance training materials in the entities and the councils. Next slide, please, Julie. Our planned target of developing the EL strategy and publishing it was achieved, and the strategy was finally named the Digital Health Strategy of South Africa, 2019 to 2024. We also had to achieve implementation and dissemination of the survey. We had to do a survey and achieve dissemination of our survey results on NHI phase one, which was an end evaluation, and that was achieved, and reports had been circulated to honorable members in the previous administration and is available on our website. In terms of the HRH strategy published, I've explained that due to COVID, we could not publish our strategy, even though it had been finalized already by the end of December. But it has to follow due process, as honorable members are aware. We are very proud to say that that strategy has been developed, the plan has been developed, the plan is being costed, and we are also busy with an investment case to be presented to Treasury so as to make a clear case for why it's important to invest in your health workforce. Then our next target related to having primary healthcare facilities all having revised organizational structures as per the normative guides, which were determined through WISEN. Unfortunately, this achievement of this target was made very difficult because provincial departments of health follow the DPSA process of determining staff establishments, and then it became almost impossible for some HR managers to report on this process. In terms of HR regulations developed, in terms of Section 52 of the National Health Act, our end goal was to have these drafted. They were duly drafted, and the drafts were able to be presented to the AG, and hence there is no deviation. Next slide, please, Tuli. Yeah, honorable members, we wanted to have a policy for community service reviewed because of the challenges we have in placing all our community service graduates. However, this policy could not be reviewed because we had to undertake quite lengthy consultative processes to get the necessary buy-in, because many of the student bodies were not very happy, and also some of the professional bodies representing young junior doctors. Also, we had to reprioritize our funding in the last quarter to assist with the COVID. Then our next target was to have a user manual developed containing standardized PASAL data definitions so that we work according to the same definitions across provinces and across our health system. Target was not achieved because a decision was made in the light of also scarce resources, financial and other human. We decided to focus on cleaning up the existing PASAL database, and much of this was done between January and March. Next slide, please. Yeah, we had a planned target of 650 Cuban students who we were anticipating would all pass and be placed at our universities. Unfortunately, we maybe should have reframed our target from the beginning. However, that was how we had written our target. Unfortunately, four students failed. So while we had secured place for all 650 students, the four could not be placed because they had failed. And we had done considerable work to extend our training platform, as members of Parliament may be aware, because we did a lot of work with the Health Professions Council to ensure that we could absorb each and every, not only Cuban student, but also the increased number of students which our own universities were producing. Then our next target was to have 100% of our medical interns and comservs who were eligible for placement placed by October, and this was achieved without any negative media queries, etc., which is really a well done to the team who works on this. Then in terms of the number of nursing colleges accredited to offer our new qualification programs, our target was to have 10 colleges accredited to offer the new curriculum for the 3-year diploma in general nursing. And all 10 colleges were designated to offer the programs, but only 6 colleges were fully accredited because 4 colleges, unfortunately, honorable members, even with our assistance, they struggled a bit to finalize their curricula, and or the curricula were not of a sufficient standard to be accredited by the accrediting bodies. In terms of the having the nursing strategy finalized and approved, here we were confronted with the same challenge. Whilst the document was finalized and approved by TEC, our last NHC of the year focused on COVID, and all other items were removed from the agenda to focus on more pressing priorities at the time. The strategy has since been approved. Then, honorable members will be familiar with these two targets, the 100% backlog elimination for blood alcohol tests, where we've managed to achieve that after many years of not achieving 100% completion. And then we had a target of 70% backlog for toxicology tests eliminated. Unfortunately, we only had an achievement of 44.5%. And this is due to the fact that only urgent requests were prioritized. We also had numerous equipment breakdowns and delays in repairs. There were also issues with vaccinations of staff with regards to hepatitis B and the post for the head of toxicology lab in Johannesburg remained vacant. And that's the lab where many of our problems were experienced, contributing to our underperformance. So I'd like to make a comment, honorable members, on our overall performance. As I pointed out at the inception of the presentation, whilst we show our actual achievement against our planned target, when we get audited by the AGSA, they use very stringent measures with regards to counting a target as achieved or not achieved. So, for example, achieved refers to where a target meets 100% or exceeds the achievement, and that is only if it can be verified that indeed that target was achieved. So whatever we stated as our means of verification for that target, in other words, the evidence you must provide to the AGSA that you have at that target, unless that stage was reached, it unfortunately is not counted by the AGSA as an achievement. Non-achievement may even refer to an indicator where, for example, you achieve 99.9%. But you didn't achieve that final 0.1%. Like, for example, I explained with our nursing and HR strategies is one example. Similar examples can be the infrastructure projects where you can take work to 80% completion. But if it was not 100% completed and the completion certificate was not issued, because in our APP, we state that the means of verification is the final completion certificate. It then gets counted by the AG as not achieved. It does not mean, honorable members, that we didn't do 80 to 90% of the work, maybe 50 in some cases. Very rarely will you find a complete non-delivery on a target against our indicators. So, that is not to say there was some level of underperformance. We could have achieved more if we had not had our labor impasse because this did impact on overall levels of productivity of the organization and incrementally of mentally over time also on morale, which are all very important factors in contributing to achievement of targets. However, I'm very happy to report that these challenges are being addressed and we have a plan for relocation to our new building, which hopefully we can commence as soon as December. Next slide. So, honorable members, this is just the slide which shows in your pack the percentage of targets we achieved. But like I have now explained in the aforementioned slide, and as was pointed out in our entire presentation, we have achieved against the targets, although we have not achieved maybe 100% as expected by the AGSA to be counted as an achievement. And hence our achievement is reflecting only as 45.1%. Thank you. Next slide, please, Julie. This slide, honorable members, is just to show our current organogram with our vacancy rate. And as honorable members will see, there are vacancies across all of the programs. I will just leave it at that. And then the main reasons for the vacancy rate, though, I want to highlight is the limited funding, the restructuring of 21 million of our COE budget, which we directed to NHI, and the gradual falling away of posts over time due to budget cuts. And then I would like to move to the next slide, at which time I hand over to our CFO, and I thank you for your attention, honorable members. Ian, over to you.
Thank you, Chair and Gail. If I can be allowed to share from my side to Lily. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'll run through the financial management numbers as they were reflected in the annual financial statements. And I'll also touch on the conditional grants, being indirect conditional grants and direct conditional grants. And then lastly, I will look at the audit outcomes and some of the emphasis of matter that was raised by the AG. The position as at 31st of March 2020 was the following. Our total adjusted budget amounted to 51.1 billion rand. Our expenditure was 50.7 billion. Giving us a expenditure or percentage trend of 99.2% with 422.3 million, the quantum of underspend. Compared to the next two last financial year, there's a slight improvement in terms of expenditure trends. We do have two programs that are low in comparison with others, being the administration and the NHI. Some of the reasons have already been alluded to by Gail, but I'll touch on some of them as part of our various explanations. In terms of our economic classification, the total spend on compensation was at 96% spent, relating back to the vacancy rate as reflected by Gail. Goods and services at 78% spent. Our transfers mostly at 100%. A small amount was not transferred to either NGOs or the provincial departments of health. And capital, we stood at 95.1% of expenditure. In this case, this time round, I've also included the numbers for per program, as they are reflected in our appropriation statement in the financials. Program one stood at 92.1% of expenditure. In terms of the economic classifications, all the funds were spent on compensation. There was lower expenditure on goods and services and on capital. And the reasons for these deviations on goods and services was that we had some savings on the annual membership fees due to that time the rand dollar exchange rates, in particular the membership fees we paid to international agencies like WHO. We also did not receive all the DIRCO accounts in the last quarter, as We have not also received some of the invoices on the medico-legal invoices that were not paid before the year end. And then we obviously accrued for these expenditures in our financials. We also, this year, Chair, looked at the property payments and SLAs in place by the Department of Public Works. And some of the property payments, we actually disputed them, and we also disputed some of the SLAs that were not in place, and some of those expenditures were not paid until we were able to verify that. The matter on capital assets on Program 1 was the upgrading of the security systems at Civitas Building. It was cancelled, mainly because we did not see the need to invest in a major security system as we would have a possible relocation of the Civitas Building in the near future. On the NHI, we stood at 92% total expenditure. Affordable medicines was the one that spent less in terms of percentage, although the quantum is not that big. And it also relates to the indirect expenditure on affordable medicines, which I will touch on in a few minutes. Economic classifications do show the slow expenditure on goods and services at 78% and also on capital expenditure. Although we were able to commit most of the funds, all of the funds on capital in the last quarter, I think there were some issues on the supplier, and in particular with CETA contracts that were not in place when we were ready to place these orders. So just to confirm, some compensation, some vacant posts were not filled in time. On the goods and services, in particular, the GP contract and capitation model has been a perennial issue for us. We were also dependent on inputs from the National Treasury to implement this reimbursement model. Unfortunately, this has not happened, and we had to redirect these funds back to provinces as well as to other non-personal components of the indirect conditional grant. The matter of the warehousing management system was in process. As I explained, that there were some challenges with bidders which were only resolved in the latter part of 2019-20. Unfortunately, this was also a function or a result of some CETA contracts that were not in place at the time when we were able to commit the funding. The National Surveillance Center, in terms of capital assets, were also put on hold, mainly because of the potential relocation of the Civitas Building. Our Program 3 is our biggest program in terms of expenditure and budgets, and particularly the HIV component or sub-program, which you can see is about 22.4 billion of the 22.8 billion budget. This program spent 99.4% of its total budget. I'll just highlight the two communicable diseases and non-communicable diseases. We did, in the latter part of the financial year, move quite a bit of funds into these two programs to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. And although we did commit quite a bit of funds in March after the proclamation, obviously, some of these expenditures only materialized in the next financial year, which we did accrue for. So we did increase the communicable diseases and non-communicable diseases sub-programs for that reason, for us to be able to generate commitments against these budgets. On the economic classifications, compensation at 89%, goods and services at 63%, as I explained, capital at 22%, but in reality, the quantum is quite small at 1.1 million, so it's not significant. The reasons for the deviations, goods and services, there were some health communication campaigns that were not fulfilled by the service provider, and some of these invoices we had to accrue for. We also had some issues with supply of condoms in the third quarter of the last financial year, which was solved to some extent in 1920, and some invoices processed in 2021. But I must say, Chair, on this one, and this is earmarked funds for condoms, We did have a particular under expenditure or saving, which we did reprioritize to other areas in this program. The annual TB Day was cancelled due to the COVID-19 outbreak. On transfers, although the quantum is smallish, there are some NGOs that either did not apply for funding or that did not have their documents in order as required by the PFMA. For example, they were not able to provide business plans or were not able to provide annual financial statements of the previous period for us to be able to effect the transfer. And as I said, there was a small portion on the medical equipment, although quantum is not, it wasn't a big quantum. On PHC, 98.7% spent. All programs spent well on this one. It's one of the smaller programs in terms of budget. And you can see that the expenditure we felt was in line, and 2.7 million was the quantum of underspent. The hospital systems program at 99.9% spent. This is a particular improvement again, Chairs, on previous financial year and on our ability to spend the indirect conditional grant on infrastructure in particular, as well as ensuring that the direct grants on infrastructure was transferred to our provinces, and also made sure we monitoring that the provincial departments spend properly on these grants. Agronomic classification, the smallest spend was on goods and services at 91% at 14 million, and a smaller portion on the capital component. Just to say, Chair, to reiterate the point is that we can only equip health facilities after they've been finalized or after they've actually reached a certain point of completion, and that would normally be at the point of practical completion, and in some instances only at final completion. And those certificates normally do take a while to get them, as there's also retention periods that need to be considered. Program 6 was at 98.9% spent. Most programs spent well in terms of percentages. The one that was, in terms of quantum, was underspent was the public entities management and laboratories. I want to touch on that now. Just to say that in terms of the forensic laboratories budget, and in particular the Dermal Laboratory, there was an access issue of Logos in September 2019 in terms of cabling and group wires, which delayed spending significantly in that period. Although there was some clawing back of this, we couldn't claw back all of it. I think the COO did mention the issue of the traditional health practitioners councils that is not yet effective. On the capital assets, we actually put out all the tenders and adjudication in time for the forensic laboratories, but there were some delays from the suppliers, and also some disputes raised by some of the tenderers that we had to deal with, and that delayed to some extent the ability for us to put out orders and receive goods in time. Chair, I want to touch on the conditional grants. Our conditional grants, this is all the direct grants that we transfer to provinces. Our spend stood at 98.7%. Or 45.7 billion at the end of the financial year, and comparative, to compare that to our last financial year at 97.9%, it's a slight improvement. There was still some contributors to the underspend, and in particular a health facility revitalization grant at 96% spent, and although it's underspent, we do see some improvements on this expenditure year on year. Unfortunately, this grant has also been the victim of cuts by our national treasury. And we foresee in particular going forward that there might be matters or issues of budget shortages on this, especially if we consider the current commitments made. The NHI spent stood at 90.5% spent. Chair, you will recall that I did report previously that we have converted this grant from an indirect grant to a direct grant, which I think actually assisted us to get to the spending level. There are some provinces that did not have the contracts in place with the GPs, and therefore they could not claim against this grant. But 90.5 is still an improvement on our previous financial years. The other grants, like the HPV grant, the HIV, the tertiary service grant, and the training development grant spent within an acceptable norm, we feel. One would expect these grants to obviously spend 100%, as many of them are supplementary to the equitable share of the provinces. The one grant that we did foresee an overspend, and which we actually controlled to some extent, was the human resource capacitation grant, which spent 101%. The only province that really overspent there was Western Cape, and we actually did expect that. And this grant will now be combined with the training development grant in future to allow some flexibility to provinces to adjust between these grants. And we hope that this will kind of address the matter on training and on the human resources grants. This is a very busy slide, but essentially what we're trying to show you is the budgets initially, the national adjustments that were made, as well as the provincial rollovers coming to an adjusted budget. We also show what we have transferred to the provinces, and in this financial year we did not keep any funds back. We transferred all the funds out to provinces. The expense was at 98.7% of budget, and in terms of what we've transferred, 99.7%, so that percentage goes up. And as I previously also showed or tried to show, is what the provincial treasuries have actually transferred to the provincial departments of health on these budgets. And then just comparing it against the previous financial year's expenditure. This is the position by province. I'm not going to go through this in quite detail. I want to get to the indirect grant overview. The expenditure was sitting at 89.5% spent. We're just slightly below the acceptable norm, and I will address those reasons now. The major contributors was on our personal services components. I did mention that the GP capitation portion was not implemented in this year due to some lack of capacity, and also because we needed some national treasury inputs, which was not forthcoming. The non-personal service components on the CCMDD, there were some delays in submission of invoices by our service providers, but we also had some significant donor assistance on this program. And I'm guess that the lesson for us is to take is to balance whatever donor funds we expect with the allocations in a financial year. On the ideal clinic and information systems, there were some expiry of contracts. And this was part of the CETA matter. Although we did eventually obtain deviation in the last quarter, and we did commit these funds, unfortunately not all suppliers could deliver within the financial year, and we had to accrue some of this expenditure in this current financial year. So just as a summary on the indirect grants, and the indirect grants in particular refer to our national health insurance. You can see that the rewrite components spend 99.6% of its budget, which is a marked improvement on previous financial years. Although we did have to redirect some funds to COVID during the last 2 months. The non-personal component sitting at 77%. I did explain to some extent the CCMDD issue at 74%, idle clinic at 52%, peer reviews were not concluded by financial year end. And again, a quantum is not big in terms of the total picture, but the percentage is sitting at 52%. The medical stock surveillance system, that's related back to the matter of the supply and the deviations on IT that was required. On personal services, the contracting in part was transferred as a direct grant to provinces and would not reflect then as part of this final budget. But we were able to ensure that on mental health services and in particular on oncology services of the budget, there was quite a huge spend, or you know, 99% of the budget was spent. There was a significant reduction of budgets, and as provinces are able to conclude contractual agreements on these programs, we will claw back the budget in the next financial year. Chair, if you allow me, I will not go through the next couple of slides. They can be taken as read, but they just look at each grant per province. And if you allow me, I will just jump to the audit outcome. So our audit outcome for 1920 was an unqualified audit report. We've been able to maintain this for 9 consecutive years at the moment. But I think what made this year particularly challenging is that we essentially ran 2 audits at one in the last quarter, because there was a big focus by the AG on the COVID-19 special audits, which we had to deal with. And in the face of many other auditors and also you know, the matter that we've been raising at Civitas and Labor, etc., we do feel that there is quite an achievement in terms of the additional pressures that were on staff. But unfortunately, we were able to manage this process at the final hurdle. We did request the AG in time for an extension, which was granted, and we also have to commend the AG for their you know, additional staff and resources that they pushed for us to be able to conclude this audit. Just to reflect on the emphasis of matter, there were 2 that was reported in our audit report. The first one was the restatement of corresponding numbers on commitments. So there was a change in the modified cash standards, which do happen every now and again from the National Treasury, which means that we didn't have to go back and restate corresponding numbers. And the AG felt that this is a matter that had to be reported to the reader of the financials. The second one, again, was just, you know, for the information of the reader, to say that there will be significant subsequent events to deal with the impact of COVID-19. And Chair, I have previously reported and presented the budgets assumptions and the budget changes that were put in place during the last quarter. The one matter that was a material misstatement which were corrected to ensure unqualified audit was in relation to the inclusion of management fees in the capital work in progress on our infrastructure grants. Chair, we actually had this matter in the last financial year as well. And after considerable technical evaluation, both by ourselves, the National Treasury and the AG, I think hopefully we've now kind of agreed on how to deal with this management fees. It was dealt slightly differently in the last financial year, and that's why we used the same principles in this financial year. And unfortunately, there was a technical move on that. But we were able to quite easily correct the population on those management fees, as all the information was quite readily available. So this did not significantly delay the audit process, fortunately. On the performance audit, Chair, you would see that, again, the audit report does not raise any opinion on performance audits, but it does get reflected in our management report that is discussed with management. So let me explain something just to say that the AG would, when they engage a department, decide on which programs they would like to audit. In particular, they would obviously look at the audits or the performance, or the programs that has the biggest number of performance indicators. Last year, we had qualified reports, I think, on two of the programs that they chose. This year, we started pulling it around. Two programs were actually unqualified, and we had one qualification on forensic chemist laboratories, which was quite unfortunate. And we probably need to look at this, as this relates directly to record keeping at the forensic chemist laboratories. So it's not something that is that we're not able to rectify or to look at. It's just that, you know, in terms of our timing and the urgency to finalize the audit report, we conceded to some of these matters. So we do think that the clear audit again is within our reach, both financial and performance information. We've had some improvements every year. I know I say this every year that we're getting there, but we've put in quite a bit of systems to manage our audit risks, both on financial and performance information. We will analyze and are analyzing the notes within the annual financial statements where we need corrective actions. And in particular, the ones that we're looking at is our capital commitments. Our commitments raised by our implementing agents always pose an audit risk to us. Irregular expenditure, we need to do determinations on the current irregular expenditure. And then obviously, we need to continuously evaluate our performance indicators and also eliminate indicators that the Department of Health nationally has very little control over. And that would be an ongoing exercise. Chair, thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. That concludes the presentation. Apology that it taken quite a bit of time, but there's quite a lot to go through. But thank you very much. So over back to you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, DM. Let me then take the opportunity to thank the Deputy Minister and the Department for that presentation. We will move over now to the members for discussions on the agenda. I've got a long list here. I want members to please take note of the numbers. Number one is Member Cherwa. Number two, Wilson. Three, Van Staden. Four, Dongeni. Five, Imam Sheikh. Six, Maleka. Seven, Lutuli. Eight, Christian. Nine, Member Kwaruvi. 10, Dr. Janki. 11, Dr. Temekwayo. 12, Member Ismail. 13, Member Muniai. 14 is Dr. Tlomo, and I will take number 15. So we can start with Member Cherwa.
Chair, my hand is up.
Who's there?
Honorable Anna Kela.
Honorable Kela, I will take you number 14 before Dr. Tlomo, ne?
All right.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, thank you for the report to the department, but I think I will firstly note the dissatisfaction on my part because of the regression, right? And it's not even noted properly in this report. If it wasn't for the Auditor General of South Africa, we wouldn't know that the National Department of Health has actually regressed financially in terms of management, in terms of human resource as well. There's a consistent regression in the Department of Health, and nothing is being done about it. Your PR, your management, your communications part is very good. It makes it look like you guys are doing something, but in actual fact, the papers speak a whole different reality. Another issue is the issue of the information you give us. And the AG also also told the Portfolio Committee on Health about this issue, that the reliability of the reports you bring to this Portfolio Committee should in fact be questioned. Another thing that will even point to this thing, you speak about having done 100% of the 6 refurbishment of the hospital and clinic facilities that you had set the target for. Can we get can we get the names of all these facilities you speak of here so we can go and check for ourselves? And I'll tell you something, I'm sure one of them, or even more in fact, do not represent what you put in this report. And an example is BG Forrester in Eastern Cape. We had approved the budget for that facility to be refurbished and to increase its capacity. I was doing oversight in that hospital there, and they've been waiting for you guys to come and do what you've promised to do. The ceiling is falling. Doctors don't have office space, and they have to share office space with patients on the corridors. So I want you guys to give us the names of these 6 facilities you note in the report so we can go and do oversight ourselves. Secondly, can we have a proper update on the interns and placement of interns? You had met with them and met with their representations on Sunday and said you would have done the placements by the 17th of November. This was not the case and still isn't even right now. Can we have a proper update on what is to be done and if this issue will be resolved by the end of today? Because you can't keep on giving promises and not fulfilling them, especially because we have an issue of human resources, an issue of unemployment in this country, and you keep on taking students outside of this country to China and Cuba to get proper education, and then they come back to site and you can't even place them. This means we have less time to actually grow the specialist industry because you can't do a simple thing, an administrative issue. In hospitals, you fail to do. Administration is that poor at the National Department of Health. Thirdly, can we get an update on when the community healthcare workers will be permanently employed by the National Department of Health? Because I think this is the big issue that you keep on writing over and giving us reports that we didn't ask for. Like, for instance, you emphasize the issue of training, even though we know that you don't pay them well, and these are temporary posts. For instance, even in some hospitals, by March, some of these posts, as you know, will always be paid because you've given them contracts until March because of COVID-19. So even the increase you note in this report, you don't state that there was an increase because you were preparing for COVID-19 and that most of them will be put off next year, March. Can we get a date of when community healthcare workers in hospitals and clinics will be permanently employed? And another issue is the regression of entities. The National Department of Health is definitely not doing enough to ensure that most of the problems noted in the entities are resolved, especially because there is no accountability strategy in the Department of Health or in the ministry, in fact, to ensure that the problems that arise in some of these entities are resolved and people are held accountable. There's an issue at CMS, Council for Medical Aid Schemes. A young Black woman is told that she can't be nominated to run for the board of CMS because she received a bouquet of flowers. I've written to the minister about this, to know that he must investigate this issue. It can't be that we have an issue of representation. Firstly, young Black women are not represented adequately in these boards. Secondly, there's an issue of ostracization and abuse of the very same people we speak about when it comes to representation. And the department does nothing to address these issues. In fact, you fuel this whole thing because you don't hold any of these people accountable for the things that they do. I also want an update in this issue because it's been a while that I sent a letter to the minister and I still haven't had a report from his department. Another thing is the CGE report on the forced sterilization of HIV-positive Black women. I want to have an update from the Department of Health. It's been over 9 months. The CGE has released a report and gave you things to implement, recommendations to implement in a matter of 3 months, 9 months down the line, and nothing has been done by the Department of Health because you don't value the lives of Black women. You don't value the lives of HIV-positive Black women. And then you want to come and teach communities about stigma when the same department suffers from stigma and tortures Black women by forcefully sterilizing them and then not accounting for it. Can we have a proper update on what the department has done since the release of the CTE report and to date? Proper details, accountability. in this portfolio committee. And lastly, that we obviously know the issue of security systems in hospitals and clinics, but there isn't an attempt to fix this situation. Even in the establishments you mentioned of the six hospitals, you don't speak of how which security systems you've employed to ensure that security issues are dealt with. Your workers' safety is not health worker safety is not something that's ensured in our public facilities. And patient safety as well. There was a patient who got raped in hospital here in Gauteng. And a young 2-year-old boy also got raped here in Gauteng. And many other cases of rape and violence in our own hospitals. And there isn't accountability even on that part from the department. What new interventions, innovation systems have you employed? The farmers recommended countless of times the biometric system for pharmacies. You have not employed this recommendation, because I will put it to you that it benefits some of the people in power that medication goes missing, that clinics get broken into, that facilities are not safe enough. And you must really respond to this situation as a Department of Health, because you have not responded to the issue of safety of your own workers and the patients that you care for. And lastly, Chairperson, before I take too much time, access to service for sexual violence victims is dismally inadequate. There was a situation in PE of a young girl who got raped on Friday and couldn't access a clinic until Monday. That means that the chances of that victim getting justice were thwarted by the very National Department of Health. What are the strategies to ensure that this doesn't happen? It's happening today in South Africa under the guidance of John Khatla and Minister Zweli Mkhize. Yenzani, guys, to ensure that such things don't happen under your watch. Rape victims can't get justice because our laboratories of DNA are not functional, even in high-profile or mainstream provinces like Gauteng. In Hatfield, our laboratories for DNA services are not working, and some of them have not been working for months. What do you do about that? How do you take accountability for such things? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, member. Can I just request that when members speak that they switch on their videos if the connectivity allows, please. Member Wilson, you're next.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, thank you for the report. I just want to say that no amount of sweet talk or excuses changes the reality of the situation. And I think one of the biggest concerns is that in the AG's report, and I think this was particularly damning, he said that the NDOH has no regard for compliance with legislation or financial statements or legislation on financial statements. Now, this is the third year in a row that we've heard this statement from the Auditor General, and it's a damning statement, because when you sit with a situation where there's no compliance with no regard for compliance with legislation, you have a serious problem. And in the current state of affairs in South Africa, where the day-to-day talk is state capture or corruption or those kind of things, statements like this make me wonder if this is in actual fact not what is happening in the Department of Health as well, because you can't have statements like that that cannot be corroborated, and we can't find that, you know, this kind of corroboration in your report. I think concerns obviously are your underspend. 422 million underspend is huge. Now, you can explain that away as much as you like. 422 million underspend when our public health facilities are, to put plainly, just a bloody disaster. Any clinic or hospital you go to is enough to make you ill yourself in this country at the moment. It's terribly depressing, and you sit with that kind of underspending. Now, program, and I'm going to go specifically to two programs, program three and program four, where there was an underspend because of COVID. Now, whether your financial year ends end of February or end of March, we actually went into lockdown towards the end of March. So trying to justify this kind of underspending with sudden cancellations of days is like the TB day. Perhaps you can tell me when this TB day was supposed to happen. that, you know, it was right at the end of your financial year. So sudden underspend and blaming it on COVID when, you know, we're dealing with an entire year before we went into actual lockdown is concerning. I think my biggest concern is that when you achieve 46.5% of your target, but you spend 99% of your budget, is alarming. It's absolutely alarming. You can't have achieved under 50% of your target and then still spend 99% of the budget. If you had told me we only met 50% of our targets, but only managed to spend 60% of our budget, well and good. But you can't meet under 50% of your targets and spend 99% of your budget. There's just no way. You cannot justify that. It's imbalanced and it's concerning. And I think one of those concerns is the program to the NHI. Last year, the targets, the previous financial year's targets were 27. For the financial year in question, they were reduced to 12. Less than half, and you still only met 8. But you managed to spend 92% of your budget. Again, it's imbalanced. It doesn't make sense. I'm always concerned about rollovers because last year we had a variant of about 89 million. Also for the Department of Health in Limpopo, for medicines, I don't know how one does not budget for medicines. This year it's another one for medical equipment. Again in Limpopo, we're not seeing this come up in any of the other provinces. 166 million rand of irregular expenditure currently accrued, 54 million in this year. We've got to bring a stop to this. We have got to get this down. It's astronomically high and no amount of justification can explain a 54 million irregular expenditure. Vacancy rates are a huge, huge, huge concern. And then when I hear that there's a vacancy rate because there were budget cuts and the COE part of the budget was moved to NHI, you still spent 99% of the budget and didn't meet, and only met 50% of its targets, is concerning. One of our biggest problems in public health is shortage of staff. Nurses, cleaners, specialists, doctors. And yet we're cutting budgets in a very, very important line item. And without those people, forget trying to make the NHI work. You cannot make national health insurance work if your medical facilities are not up to scratch and if you don't have the staff to treat the people that you're supposed to be caring about. It just can't happen. And I'm terribly disturbed about the fact that we have not got the provincial report yet. The fact that they are late and that they are delayed is concerning because the NHS is saying, no, we've transferred all the money, so we can explain where all our money has gone. But we have no idea where that money has been spent on at a provincial level. And whether one likes it or not, the minister, deputy minister, and people in the Department of Health are still responsible or still accountable for even what happens in the provinces. And the fact that we don't have that information is absolutely alarming because this report actually means very little until we see where those grants and transfers to the provinces were actually spent. And if you as a department have actually monitored and controlled or kept an eye or are being accountable for those kind of transfers. I know that there are a lot of questions, Chair. That's my statements. I'm pretty sure that I will be covered by the rest. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Wilson. Member Van Staden.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Madam Chairperson, I'm a bit disappointed about the reports we got here today because it seems like everything is in nice glamour and the roses and everything, but indeed it is not the case. We heard last week from the Auditor General that this department undergo irregular expenditure of 69 million rand for the 2019-20 financial year due to non-compliance. Now, in 2018-19, it was 37 million due to procurement processes not followed. That's the increase of 32 million rand in one financial year. But it's totally unacceptable and that is extending down to a disaster. I agree, we need to get a detailed breakdown of every department irregular expenditure for this 2019-20 financial year. We also need to get on an urgent basis every report of every provincial department in this country. Now, what is concerning is the following phrases which we've been told last week by the Auditor General, that there's no response with required urgency to our message about addressing risks and improving internal controls. This is totally unacceptable, and there must be consequences. Last year we had the same problem, but then we had an underspending of a budget of nearly 1 billion rand. So the problem keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. When these other words come to attention, officials who deliberately or negligently ignore their duties and contravene legislation are not held accountable for their actions. We need to name and shame these employees and these officials, and there must be consequences. And the other concern is that no one comply with the legislation process in the department. And that is a serious problem. It can't carry on like this. Now, this is the reason why children are getting raped in our hospitals. This is the reason why we experience the problems currently that we experience in the Eastern Cape. Everybody, everywhere is on strike due to these problems in this department. There's a strike now in the Eastern Cape as well. This is the reason why bodies decomposed in broken mortuary fridges of the Mafeking Hospital in Northwest. Now, this department will never come out of a swamp of corruption and maladministration unless dramatic measures are put in place to hold people and the officials accountable and to face the consequences in full extent of the law. Now, Madam Chairperson, people's lives are at stake here, and it is unacceptable that this department gamble with the lives of South Africans and our healthcare workers, which, by the way, deaths under COVID-19 is the highest in the world under our healthcare workers. We are ranked the top 5 in the world. This is totally unacceptable. Why is this happening? Because the hospitals, the clinics is in a terrible state. We saw what happened this year during COVID-19 in our state hospitals. And we are still experiencing big problems in the Eastern Cape. And this sort of practice, Madam Chairperson, must come to a stop. Now I want to go to slide 40. Only one new hospital in KwaZulu-Natal was built in this financial year. It means only one new hospital in the whole of the Republic of South Africa. For this population of people who is in dire need of medical help and attention, we only can seem to build one, and not only a complete one, just one half hospital in South Africa. For 16 hospitals, revitalization projects not completed. This is totally unacceptable. Madam Chairperson, it is time that this Portfolio Committee of Health and the Select Committee of Health go and undertake oversight at every single state hospital, provincial hospital and clinic in this country to go and see for ourselves what is going on here. This situation in South Africa cannot carry on like it's currently carrying on. And my last one, Madam Chairperson, is on slide 50. I want to know, and I want the answer today, what is the reason for failure of 4 Cuban students? While we have many South African medical practitioners and healthcare workers who is currently unemployed and already trained, who can do this job in our clinics and hospitals. This is a big problem we are facing with. I said it many times and say it again. This health department will never come out of the slums. People must be sending to jail for the corruption and maladministration in this department. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Member Van Staden. Member Dongeni.
Thank you, Chair. Hello.
I can hear you. You can continue.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Thanks for the report, which have been given by Department of Health. But we've got many questions according to their report. For instance, the on ages report, there is a on ages report, no? The department should provide a comprehensive report on parliament on irregular expenditure, which is extremely high to the value of up to 161 million from 112.1 million in the previous year. What are the reasons for irregular expenditure and what are being done to address the prevent irregular expenditure in the department? Has anyone been held accountable for this? The second one, the AG notes slow response by management in improving key controls and addressing risk areas. How is the department addressing this? What role is department playing addressing the high level of irregular expenditure within provincial departments of health, which have increased over the past few years? So it's a long story. It's not something like 2 years, 3 years, 2 years, 3 years. It's more. The department should provide an explanation on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure occurred. What action have been taken against officials who catch fruitless and wasteful expenditure? Who permitted fruitless and wasteful expenditure? What is being done to prevent this in future? The last one, how is the department dealing with the accrual, which is a big issue in the health sector? Has department assist provinces in dealing with the accrual? Thank you, Chair. I will come back for the second bite.
Thank you, Member Dongeni. Our next member is Imam Sheikh. Member Imam Sheikh, are you still on the platform? If not, can we move to Member Maleka and then we can come back to Imam Sheikh?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks to members and the department. Chairperson, I want to check if the department can please provide a detailed report on the challenges with the reimbursement model for the contracting capitation model. Have any general practitioners, pharmacy assistants, and other health professionals been contracted to work in the NHI pilot site? How has this affected service delivery? And how is the department implementing the lessons identified in the NHI evaluation report? And also, Chairperson, I want to check also in the issue of CCMD program. Is an important intervention with patients demanding to the register of the program. On page 32, is there program standardized across the country? In which provinces are home deliveries provided, and which require patients to come to a setup such as churches, etc. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Maleka. Is Imam Sheikh back? If not, Member Letuli.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to everyone. Most of the questions have been covered too, but I would also like to know from the department, it seems as if they are using too many consultants. So I would like to know what role did the consultant play in that department? Were they performing routine tasks or were they providing specialized services? And also, Chair, maybe to add to what other members were saying in terms of unemployed graduates, can the department give us details of how many unemployed graduates or interns has the department hired, especially per province? Thank you.
Thank you, Member Letuli. We can move to Member Christian.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My question, firstly, I would just like to agree with what the other members have stated, and just like to add that certainly the targets achieved does not correspond with the expenditure. Most of the expenditures from the finance report has stated 99% or just below that. And this certainly does not correspond with the work done on the ground. And that is obviously of huge concern, that money has been spent, yet we cannot see what that money has been spent on. My second question, my second point is on the mental health. And there also I would like to state that it's quite disturbing to see that targets have not been met. If I'm not mistaken, zero targets have been achieved. And that is extremely disturbing considering that we've just come through a pandemic. In fact, we are in the throes perhaps of a second wave. Yet, mental health has taken a back seat in our country. So my question to the department is, how are we going to roll out a program to see to it that the mental health of South Africans do not lag behind, especially in light of the pandemic? People have lost jobs, people have been ill, etc. So we are really a country in need of some kind of assistance here. My next question is with regard to the HPV grant. Again, extremely concerning. Targets have not been achieved. The budget has been hugely cut. Yet we know that our young girls are hugely exposed to HPV. So my question is, how and are there any plans to further roll out awareness campaigns in terms of our HPV? And, will the money, will we still get additional funding with regard to the HPV grant? How will we ensure that our young girls have an option of actually taking this vaccine? Are we rolling it out to schools? Are communities aware, etc.? In light of the budget cuts, how will we ensure then that this is back on track? And then lastly, my question is around community healthcare and primary healthcare. Now, we've seen there that only 12.8% of the targets have been achieved there. And again, extremely concerning. Currently in the Northern Cape, primary healthcare and community healthcare facilities are on strike. And the reasons for this is due to dilapidated clinic infrastructure. Caregivers have not received stipends. They've been promised increases. The department has not come to the table with regard to that. They've been promised permanent positions. Again, that has also been lacking. So the clinics have been closed there for a number of days, and it's concerning that, clinics are closed due to dilapidated infrastructure, lack of mobile units, etc. So a large cohort of our patients are forfeiting their chronic medication, and that's concerning. So again, I would just like to come back and comment again that the targets achieved does not correspond with the expenditure that has been presented to us by the finance department. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Christians. We are moving to Member Warubi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the report that they've given. There are a number of things, and I'm not going to repeat some of the issues which have been raised by my colleague in the interest of time. I have some issues around to Ms. Andrews about some of the issues that were stated. So I'll take it back to the program two around the NHI program. I see that the department is very proud of its target of registering patients, registering 45 million South Africans on the patient beneficiary registry. I want to understand how this works. The reason being is that, is this simply a population of a system of essentially taking what is publicly available or from Home Affairs records and simply just emulating it into a health system record system? Or is it actually a substantive system that allows patients to be truly recorded on an online system, so that what we have, which is what the department has been trying to do for many, many years, is to have one single paperless patient registration system where patients, regardless of whichever facility they go to across the country, they're able to simply arrive at that facility and have their details be pulled up and have their folders be pulled up from an electronic system. I mean, I think that, you know, in 2020, this is where we should be headed and not just simply a listing of people. So I would just like to understand how this system is working, because if the department is saying that 45 million South Africans are now able to walk into any facility and have their details on an online system, then that is a wonderful feat. And so I would really like to understand. Then, chairpersons of both committees, I really want us to take this seriously when we're looking at the mental health targets. I actually, quite frankly, the minister and the deputy minister, we should make sure that they have a separate session with these committees where they come and account for this dismal, dismal performance by the department in this program. It is absolutely shocking, considering the fact that we've come from the biggest blight in our democratic South Africa, which is Life Isidimeni and what happened there, which is something that is yet to be concluded to this day. Yet we can have targets set by the department, which quite frankly, Chair, are really low targets. One of the targets was essentially putting 22,000 people in touch with specialists or healthcare professionals in that field. I mean, that is absolutely pathetic. And yet, zero of those targets were met. Not a single one. Which then brings me to Ian on that very issue. Ian, how is it that on your report, the mental health services under program two, 99% of its budget was spent, yet not a single target was met? I don't understand how it is that this department can't, because mental health services colleagues have been essentially the stepchild in this department for many years. This is not a new issue. And I would like to agree with Member Wilson when we say we've got to be careful about scapegoating the pandemic when we're dealing with this, because this is not a new issue. The targets around mental health services have been lagging behind for many, many years. But this year, in this past financial year, is truly pathetic. And quite frankly, it makes me ashamed. How is it that we, as the members of this House, are holding you accountable if you can't meet single targets in one program? And then the other issue is around the ideal clinic status. Awarding. So in the presentation, 1,906 primary healthcare facilities were awarded the ideal status. Now, I want to understand again, I mean, is this simply a listing of primary healthcare facilities which have now achieved ideal status, ideal clinic status? And how does this correlate with what the Office of the Health Standards has essentially stated, where they've stated a fraction of healthcare facilities that they looked at are compliant with the standards that they set? And so is the ideal clinic status and the Office of the Health Standards, do they differ? And if so, why? Why is it that we cannot have one single standard upon which each and every single facility needs to meet? because then this is then misleading. If you've got ideal clinic status and 1,900 primary healthcare facilities were awarded ideal clinic status, and yet the Office of the Health Standards is saying a fraction of these clinics are meeting these standards. So what metric are we looking at here, and why is it not uniform? And, you know, can you please urgently provide clarity on that? And then the last thing is what I understand this is obviously now not related to this particular year, but we've got obviously now a situation where there was infrastructure that was built for the in response to COVID-19. I want to now understand, is there a plan in the department to essentially try and repurpose some of those things that were built and some of those things that were bought, some of those things that were done and some of those renovations that were done? Is there a plan, and perhaps the DG, if he has joined, it would be good to hear from him, what exactly is the plan with repurposing some of that infrastructure built? Because if we must then make sure that that doesn't go to waste, because billions were spent on that response. And so we need to make sure that whatever was spent is somehow repurposed and brought back into the health system so that we can make sure that we continue having seamless healthcare services. And actually, we use this as an opportunity, colleagues, to essentially improve access and improve infrastructure in many of the areas that didn't have such things. And so what is really the plan here around the infrastructure build that was done for COVID-19? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Member. Dr. Jayanti.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to the members and the department. Chair, I think a lot has been said by the colleagues. I'll just touch on a few things. I apologize for not showing you my video. It is because I'm in a place where people are moving up and down and just may disturb everybody else. What I would like to talk to is a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. What was disturbing most in the AG's report was that the data given by the department had weaknesses, and the performance information may not be reliable or accurate. What I would like to get then from the department is how they are going to address this in the long term, and whether they have a plan to assist provinces as well. Surely we spoke about the targets that do not correspond to the targets are not meant for instance, in program, I think it's in program 3, where the spending appears to be poor, as it is only 53, they've achieved 56.3 of the targets, despite the fact that the budget is used. What I want to know is whether the department has actually gone into analyzing the targets and looking at whether they are not doing some wrong costing of all these activities that are supposed to be done. Of course, we know that COVID-19 has affected the targets, but we know at the same time that even before COVID-19, there were areas that were brought to the department that they should improve on. Mental health is one of those programs. What I would like to get then from the department is why it is a challenge to establish more district mental health teams. Can they tell us why it is difficult? Then, Chairperson, there's a program, the CCMTD is the best program that the department could have ever embarked on. But still, we would like, therefore, to the department to continuously update the committee on whether these the communities do still get their medications taken closer to them. Because what would help us is to get the statistics regularly, so that when we do the oversight, we are doing an oversight having some information that has been given to us by the department. We are aware, Chairperson, that the entities are not doing well. Maybe the department can tell us how they are helping entities to get clean audits and even the provinces, because that's a big worry to us that the provinces are not doing well. There is a colleague that spoke to people being raped in hospitals. Can also the department tell us what role they are playing in the fight against GBV? Thank you very much, Chairperson. And Chair, can I be excused? I did write to the chat that I'm in hospital. I'm just rushing to the lab now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Janki. You are excused. Can we move to the next member, Dr. Temekeyo?
Thank you, Chairperson, for this opportunity. I also won't be able to switch on my video because of the IT connection. But my first comment is to say to the presenter, we don't need your explanation that you gave us about the manner in which the AG did their audit. We believe in their report, and we don't need you to ask us what to do and how and what to believe in, especially because your presentation did not address the findings, any findings of the AG's report. In the vision of your department, it's stated to fill posts with skills, committed and competent individuals. Yet the AG's report indicated irregular expenditure. I'm repeating this because it has been echoed more than once, because it's a matter of concern. The irregular expenditure of millions by your department. Your report does not inform us on this crucial matter, because nothing wrong done in your department. There's nothing that is supposed to be accounted for in your department. Under Program 1 Administration, it said you ensure effective financial management and accountability by improving audit outcomes. But yet, when you report about the provinces, that the report on provinces, you kept on saying, we had that, we had that. It obviously means that that there is no an edge on improvement on the faults that can be observed. Statements like six provinces did not implement the medical legal claim management system shows ineffective and unaccounted responsibilities. What are your measures to keep this occurrence? The AG's report states under non-compliance on status of internal control that 67% ran through the NDOH on matters of proper record keeping, daily and monthly contract reviews, and monitoring compliance contract, which obviously means that there is no compliance under the mentioned three aspects, specifically by your department. And then how do you expect other departments or provinces that reports to you to be compliant on such matters?
The same applies to assurance provided, wherein the assurance provided by the senior management stands at 100% the rate of accountability, while the accounting authority officers stood at 33%. So obviously it means that as long as the NDOH can provide 67% of assurance, then we expect such percentages coming down to the other committees. And again, on supply chain management, under the common findings from the AG, the procurement processes were not followed. And it was a headache for us to find out that even under the NDOH, the procurement processes were also not followed. We just would like to know why is this tendency also included in your department? And the last thing is the KZN Department of Health, which works also, which is an affiliate of NDOH, funded four groups of students that were studying for orthotist and prosthetist, while group A and B were placed in 2017/2018 respectively in Wentworth hospitals. The group C and D haven't been placed to date. Various meetings with the department has yielded no possibility of them being placed since they are told that their posts are frozen. I just would like to ask whether the department is aware of this, and if yes, what would your intervention in regarding this matter be? Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. We will move to Member Ismail.
Thank you, Chair. And while we thank the department for the presentation, I think most of my colleagues have already covered quite a few issues, but I've already noticed some as well. So I'm just going to say it as it is. What is very worrisome is the non-placement of South African interns that have studied outside South Africa and met HBCSA standards. You know, it's worrisome when we have vacant posts, we have a pandemic, we have our Department of Health that basically provinces are not functioning properly, our hospitals are short-staffed, our clinics are short-staffed, yet we have interns that are ready and willing to assist. We our departments are not just placing them. So what I would like to know is that, can we get a date when these interns will be placed at our various healthcare facilities? I think all hands on deck are essential right now, and the department's delays is just causing delays in service delivery, essential service delivery to our communities. Secondly, the issue of mental health targets not being reached. There's been a lot said about it, but my worry is that, you know, when we have targets that are not reached, and it almost seems as if the department is really not concerned in really addressing these, mental health issues. We have allegations of sexual assault on mental health patients due to lack of security at our hospitals. Mental health is going to be really one of the key and main areas of healthcare due to the consequences and impact of COVID. And if the department already is not meeting targets and really does have not plan or is not telling us of any plans to really address, mental health targets, we are going to be facing major consequences in this country, because most of our communities are really already on the back foot. Many people are now needing, counseling, and this is really going to be getting worse. Mm-hmm. Can we please ask the departments to report on all these matters, if we can get a full report on all these matters, especially the rape crisis at each and every public healthcare facility. The third point is that, what is the National Department of Health doing to ensure the provinces are indeed compliant? They must be, every time we bring this up, really every time we say it's like we've broken tape recordings, is to say what consequence management and what accountability measures are really put in, by the National Department of Health to ensure that our provinces are indeed compliant. Public healthcare facilities, you know, the fact is some the report says that some are not operational due to whatever reasons. Yet we have our primary healthcare is really a key and optimal, you know, arena of service delivery. Now, really, how can we be proud of a report or presentation when really service delivery is the key and these are not being met on the ground? The underspending of budgets is again really, really unacceptable. You know, it's almost, we're almost speechless. We don't know what to say anymore. Wasteful and irregular expenditure, this doesn't seem to be improving every time we have to report on this. There's no accountability measures in place. I think what we need from the department is really what consequence management programs are in place and what accountability is going to be done and, you know, to really ensure that, you know, if this type of reports don't come back to us. The AG's report is quite damning and, you know, we seriously have major problems in the health department. And by saying, you know what, the province didn't do this or the, you know, entities didn't do this or refurbishment hasn't been taking place or it's not being, while refurbishment is taking place, but, you know, it's not yet finished on time. These are all issues that is not, by the way, issues. These are issues that are really affecting service delivery on the ground. I mean, if you're looking at the refurbishment of healthcare facilities, what's causing the delays? We have, you know, we have done several site visits to hospitals, and yes, they're all happy that refurbishment is taking place. But at the end of it is that, you know what, it's not being done on time. We cannot use those wards. We need the ward desperately, or we need the area desperately, but you know what, we can't use it because the refurbishment hasn't been done in place. Again, the department is paying contractors to do these jobs. What are we doing as a department or to ensure that things are being done properly and systematically with accountability? Lastly, on the communicable and non-communicable diseases, you know, a matter of concern is that many of our TB and HIV patients did not actually receive their medications on time during the lockdown period, you know, of COVID. And the fact that, you know, we already have delays and these are further delays, this is just making things worse on the ground. I mean, these are patients that we need to take care of. And this, you know, sufficient is not being done to really address these issues. I think I will stop there. Most of my colleagues have covered on all other issues. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Member Ismail. Member Munyai.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. First and foremost, I think I must welcome the reports, both reports from the department. Number one, I don't know which planet some of the members, honorable members, are coming from, because the planet Earth where I'm coming from, we know that COVID-19 or novel coronavirus has caused havoc within the Republic and the international community. In other words, it brought unprecedented crisis that humankind has ever seen. So that has any implications on the work of the department. And I'm saying that with respect to entities, I think it is worth our time to note and appreciate and welcome the good results from the Medical Research Council under the circumstances. And also, the other entity, Sage Sapra, I know for fact, due to the old Civitas building, which they could not access, all in all, Honorable Chairperson, let's assess this report. I think the Department of Health, under the circumstances, they've done their best. And I think we should note that this is not a normal situation. The department will turn the tide with all the entities. I don't think the posture that seeks to condemn the Department of Health for not really doing pretty well, yet we are aware and we are not able to strike a balance with the material condition of the COVID-19, I think it's not correct. So therefore, from my point of view, Honorable Chair, is that we welcome this report and support this report and support the government efforts to really thrive from the COVID-19 consequences to do better. So that will be my input, Honorable Chairperson, and really welcome. We should not condemn these people that are working pretty hard under the discussed situation of COVID. By the way, these workers, they're the ones that are bearing the brand and also have been affected by COVID by pushing papers and documentation. So indeed, we should really support the DG and the administration in general and the department. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson Gillian.
Thank you, Member Muniai. Member Kela.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My apology for not showing my picture. It's because of the network. It's not stable. Allow me, Chair, to welcome the report from the Department of Health. And also, I support the report has been tabled here today. But also, Chairperson, I welcome the implementation in Program 4, which they introduced the IDL hospital framework, which I think is a good move from the health department, because we have seen the clinic ideas happening and really it works. It's very a good a move as a Department of Health to achieve the standard of health through to IDL clinic. And also the health facility, the renovation in other areas as a Department of Health, Chairperson, I think even that one, we must appreciate, because we know that we are also correcting the mistake of the past. If you remember, before we used to have a forum as a clinic in the township, but since our government, ANC-led government, we have seen most of the things are changing in our society. Even the renovations are happening, and also the building of the clinics in areas, even in the rural areas, which we must appreciate as members of this committee, the good work that the department is doing. Although there are challenges, Chairperson, that the department is faced, but we must really appreciate, we must also look at the positive side, not only on the negative side, but also to correct the challenges that the department is having. We'll recall, members, that this year it was a difficult year for all of us because of the COVID-19 that happened to our country, and we're not ready as a country to handle this COVID-19, which I really appreciate the Minister and also the Deputy Minister for their commitment. We have seen they were up and down, making sure that at least as a country, we are trying and not to be like other countries, because other countries have lost many lives because of COVID-19, but the South Africans, we've tried all our level best. The department has tried to make sure that at least we save lives of our people of South Africa. But also, Chair, on the issue of the AG's report, as it was tabled last week, I think I will request the Chairperson and also to look at the issue of maybe we sit down and also check the findings and also the recommendations of the AG regarding the issues that was raised for our Department of Health, so that at least we correct and we are working together as a committee, and also assisting the department where it needs assistance from us, Chairperson. Then the last one, Chairperson, I must really appreciate. I support the report as being tabled today by the Department of Health. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, can I squeeze in just two questions from Sokata, please, before the two chairs speak?
Okay, thank you, Member Kela. Member Sokata, I'll allow you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, let me also welcome the report from the department. And let me also say, I want to salute the department for having received unqualified audit opinions for 9 consecutive years. In the same breath, Chair, let me just ask 2 questions. The first one is around the vacancy rate. I've seen that the department has got a 14% vacancy rate. And the presenter have indicated that the reasons for that is funding. And the second one was the shifting of funds. I just want to check going forward, is there any plans from the department to make sure that they lower that percentage from 14% going downwards? Then the second one, Chair, is around the Cuban program. I just want to check that when students come back from Cuba and then they are placed in the South African universities, some of them, as the presenter have indicated, they fail. Now I want to check, Chair, if those students fail, is there any program that the department puts these students on? Because we know that that year that students are placed in the South African universities is very difficult for them, because they will have to switch off from Spanish to English now. Is there any program that the department puts them on when they have failed their exams? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Member Sokata. I will now give to the Chairperson, Dr. Dlomo.
Thank you very much, my co-chair. And please, my battery is running low. So after my input, please, I would request that you take the meeting to its conclusion. But let me start. I have a couple of points. One, I got three messages 3 days ago from some medical students, 6 years medical students, and they're all very impressive. It's written in this way in their code. They received a note like this from the department. Please note that the preliminary allocation results for group 2 annual cycle has been released. Now I phoned these students and they were indicating to me that they're very happy that even before they write their exams, they have already received confirmation from the department where they will be placed, and if they need to swap this, that, and the other, but they are already there. So I would wish that each department, because this is one area I've always been watching this space, when you start briefing the students in their readiness to start. So please carry on and do even much more, so that by end of December, we do not have a challenge like we normally sometimes have in January, students not knowing where to go, not only medical students, but physiotherapists, all other allied healthcare professionals. That is commendable to you. Number two, Honorable Kwakhube raised a point which I would like to commend and support. But this is not because it's a criticism to you and you alone. I've always been saying this. In the world, health is not focusing well on mental health. Now, I would want to make a request that we find space and time with the department to look into mental health, even if you have a half a day's or a day's workshop on mental health situation in the country. And we really get that sorted out and we move on so that we don't have what is lacking behind just in the world. Every country, when they are short of resources, will squeeze mental health and get less and less attention. So can we maybe think about that going forward? Mr. Ian van der Merwe, I hear you are beating your drum and you are saying you've done well, probably yes, but the Auditor General is saying, if they had not written to you to actually ask you to do some material adjustments, you would have moved from this unqualified audit outcome to a qualified one. So my point is, why should the department not be able to just make a submission once off and get an unqualified or even a clean audit so that you can be a better brother than the provinces? Why should you only get an unqualified audit after you have been asked to make corrections? Because how come you think that you have good resources? There should be a problem maybe in some provinces, not really affecting yourselves. On the issue of the ideal hospital status, I would wish that we can be appraised as to how often do you get these reports? How often can you share these reports to us? Because for me, that's one of the backbone of NHI. The more you do well on actually improving hospital services, hospital district health services, the better would be someone have a hope for the NHI. We need to take a collective view for the delay in the NHI bill, but more so us, because we have processed it up to our level, but the COVID-19 has made, among other things, the delay, which we are now resuscitating as a portfolio, because our colleagues here in the NCOP are eagerly waiting the outcome. The outcome will only come to them after we have processed it, got it to the speaker and processed it to send it to them. So we are aware of our delays on this one. My last point, or the last part one, this is MTD is always commendable. You have done well, and it continues helping our patients out there. And you must never lose focus on this program, because it is almost a step in the right direction, even towards improving national health insurance. My last point is on EMS, emergency medical services. Please let us be clear. Your improvement there are not really permeating down to a level where South Africans can be able to say, can you be able to quantify, say, rural versus urban? In rural, last year or 2 years ago, you'd wait for 2 hours for ambulance. Now you wait for an hour or less. In the urban, you'd wait for 45 minutes. Now you wait for 15. Are you able to improve your fleet? Are you able to actually improve your time, waiting times? Because that is what matters. I mean, there is this issue, especially in accidents. If you have an accident and you are not met by the emergency medical service for the first hour, your chances of survival are getting less and less. So please, let us focus on this, because again, emergency medical services are a backbone of a successful health system in the country and in the world. Thanks, Chairperson, and let me end there.
Thank you, Dr. Dlomo. Just a few questions from my side to the department. let me first of all welcome this annual report, and then also welcome the fact that the department has reported under Civitas Holding, which is a very positive report. My only comment there will be, when will this move happen, if you can enlighten us? Then the issue of the TB indicators, if you can give us the information of what have you done to improve the TB indicators. And then also taking into consideration that we are in this COVID-19 pandemic, what was the effect of COVID-19 on the TB services in the country? And then lastly, I think it will be appropriate to ask the question from the department about how COVID-19 has made an impact on the work of this department, and also what lessons have you learned moving forward in the country out of this COVID-19 pandemic. I will now hand over to the DM and the department to answer the questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will make a few remarks and attempt to deal with some of the questions, and then I'll hand over to Dr. Gail Andrews and the team. And I think DG has now joined us. I saw from the system that the DG is now on the platform, so DG can also come in. Just from the first one, Chair, from Honorable Chira, I think, unfortunately, I think Honorable Chira made a very sweeping statement about the regression in terms of HR, finance, notwithstanding the fact that, as indicated by the report from the Auditor General, the department has sustained an unqualified audit. I think the team will respond on the concern raised by the AG on reliability of information. I think on the placement of interns, the chair of the portfolio committee, Honorable Loma, has already in a way dealt with that. Let me just say that the department, notwithstanding a number of challenges which Dr. Andrews mentioned, including difficulties which we had over the last, this financial year, as the chair has just now indicated, the challenges we have had with the headquarters, Civitas, with various sort of conflicts with the workforce, with the labor unions concerning the safety of the building, and therefore not up to 100% functionality of the headquarters, affecting a lot of staff members. But notwithstanding that, just on the issue, for instance, of placement of interns, this, as Honorable Loma has indicated, there has been continuous improvement, again, notwithstanding serious shortage of funds on an annual basis, as financial allocation has been reduced year in and year out. We have made it a point that, because internship is a statutory requirement where, you know, a graduate cannot go and function without internship. So it's by law that they must be placed. So notwithstanding challenges in terms of the finances every year, including the current year, the attempt is made to make sure that especially South African citizen graduates must be prioritized, and this is happening, and as early as possible they are informed. On the just on the Commission for Gender Equality report on forced sterilization, agreeing that this matter needs to be brought to finality. The work has been done. There was just one or two matters which needed to be tidied up, and we will definitely come back sooner, back to the portfolio committee to give a report on this matter. But we just wanted to make sure that, because there are a lot of allegations which needed to be investigated, that all those investigations are finalized and a report will be coming to the portfolio committee. I'm sure DG and the team will make sure that that investigation on our part is concluded. Chair, am I still on the platform? I am on the platform. As far as I'm concerned, that's my time to answer.
Can I just ask? The member, I don't think it is correct to call a point of order when the DM is responding to questions and nobody called points of orders on any member when they were doing their statements and asking questions. Can we allow the DM to continue, please?
Thanks for your protection, Chair. The issue which has been raised by a number of members about the non-correlation between the expenditure and the performance report. Just 2 points I want to make on that. As some of the honorable members, including Honorable Wilson, did comment on that, a large chunk of the 51.195 billion allocation to the National Department of Health goes as the transfers to provinces and also to various NGOs and other providers of particular services. As a matter of fact, as reported in the report just now, out of the 51.195 billion, 47.871 actually goes as transfers, and only about 3 billion rand is essentially spent directly through the national department. Now, that is just the first starting point. That therefore, when we report on the performance, it's in terms of the direct functions which are in the national department largely, but also, as you would see, there is also some aspects of the performance which overlaps into what provinces also need to perform. But it is impossible for the national department to, as honorable, I think Honorable Wilson did say, it would have been good if the performance report was done composite with all the provinces, but that's not how our system functions. So that is the first point to just remind members. But also just to say that, as already explained, that when it's even in terms of the direct functions of national, when it said that this particular target was not met, it doesn't mean that nothing was done. In some cases, as is indicated in infrastructure, it may just be that the project was not brought to completion in time for the completion of the financial year, but it was at 99%. What was left was a completion certificate, which was not issued by the time of the audit. And for instance, some of those, as you would have seen, if you look at the, for instance, the issue of the medical legal, some of those functions, we develop the norms and standards, and we provide to the provinces the template in terms of which certain functions need to be done. But if those functions are not completed, it's a reflection on the national department, whereas, you know, it's impossible to can go directly and take over that function. But some of the targets sometimes are just not really, you know, properly maybe structured. As you would have seen, for instance, where you have 650 students studying and you make provision for all the 650 to be given space and only 646 pass, it's regarded as a non-performance, but the department can literally go and write the exam for the students. So those are some of the things which are reflected, but in actual fact cannot be done directly, but we have the supervisory role, and therefore we need to be measured in terms of those. The issue of irregular expenditure, the team will respond to that, because indeed it is not good to keep on having irregular expenditure, but we know that in some instances these things do happen where it's unavoidable, where certain things have to be done in emergency situations. But I leave that to the CFO and the team to comment on that. Also, the respond to risk, I think the team will respond on that. I think the issue, Honorable Van Staden had raised the issue about Cuba. Basically, just to remind the Honorable Member that these are South Africans who got an opportunity to study medicine in Cuba, and they come back to work in the country. So for us, it's not contrasting them with those who qualified in South African universities in terms of opportunities for them to complete and be able to contribute to the health services of the country. We give those opportunities to students who are in the local South African universities, but also those who study in Cuba. And also, we try everything together with the Health Professions Council to make sure that South African youngsters who study in other foreign universities should also, there should be a streamlined way in which they can be, you know, given a chance to enter the South African system properly accredited through the Health Professions Council. I think I've already dealt with the issue of irregular and expenditure. The CFO will come back to that. I just wanted to check on a few issues. I think we already mentioned on the targets. The mental health, just to touch on a major issue, agreeing with the honorable members and their concern. I'm sure this is a matter which we want to assure the committee that we will definitely focus and come back and report. Agreeing with Honorable Lomo that we know that mental health has generally been neglected for various reasons of the pressure of communicable, non-communicable diseases, trauma, and so on. Mental health has tended to be not properly catered for, and we will come back because it is actually, we're also not happy with the fact that we know that the difficulty here is that if you look at psychiatrists, for instance, almost 90% of registered psychiatrists are in the private sector. And you'll find the same thing with clinical psychologists and other professionals. And that's why to provide the service, the idea was to go and outsource and contract also private providers. But since it clearly there was a major difficulty in terms of that, we will definitely come back. Honorable Chair, I think for now, let me just leave it there in terms of just the high level areas which I wanted to just touch on and ask DG and Dr. Andrews just to allocate so that the management members can then pick up on some of the issues which I didn't touch on. And if we need to round up, then I can also come back. DG, you can maybe just lead the team, see who's going to take which items. I see you on the platform. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. DG,
you are muted. Okay, sure.
Thank you very much, Honorable DM. Honorable co-chairs of the meeting, honorable members of the portfolio committee and colleagues. Indeed, the DM has touched on a number of high-level questions that are cross-cutting. I will touch on a few and then hand over to the DDGs to deal with some of the granular issues that came as questions. I think the first one that the DM has touched on the issue of the Commission on Gender Equality. Yes, it's a matter that we are dealing with, and we will be coming back with an update. We did actually have a meeting with the Commission last week, the chairperson and the commissioners, just to agree on a joint way forward of closing the matter down. So we will be updating the committee very soon, as the Deputy Minister has mentioned. When it comes to the issue that was raised by Honorable Kwakube, on the infrastructure that we have developed using the COVID money. It is indeed correct, Honorable Member, that deliberately as a department, we have invested into the infrastructure, into the infrastructure in hospitals. And that infrastructure that we have invested in is actually going to be one of the long-term investments that we're doing into our health systems so that we ensure that we move forward. Even in terms of the equipment, the ventilators that were bought, some of them through the Solidarity Fund, some were donated, those are going to actually improve the services in our health system as we move forward. So we do know that the investment will go a long way into ensuring that we move into the NHI as a country as soon as possible. Then there was an issue on the strike of the community health workers the issue of them being made permanent that was raised by one of the honorable members. Yes, this matter, the minister did pronounce on it yesterday that the matter is being dealt with. Actually, the National Health Council chaired by the minister and then the deputy minister and the MECs will receive a proposal and report in their next meeting on the 26th on how we propose that we deal with the matter once and for all. So it's a matter that is really being taken seriously by the department, because we do understand the importance of the community health workers in the public health service in general. Then the next issue that I would like to deal with, it's been covered, is the interns. Yes, the letter, the allocations went out last week on the 16th. After we discussed it with the provinces, we had to present it to the Technical National Health Council. And then on the issue on the effect of COVID on TB services, we do have a composite report on the effect of COVID on TB services, HIV services, immunization services. We can make that report available. It's work that we've done, and we've also developed even the catch-up plans as a department working with the partners, including the South African National AIDS Council, to try and see how do we catch up on those services that were affected, mainly because of the lockdown, but also we also had where to move some resources, including the testing resources. As you will know, that the testing platform for COVID is the same testing platform that we use for TB.
How are you watching?
We're going to fill up the water from the bottle and wash it for the water. Member Ismail, can you unmute yourself, please? Member Ismail. Thank you. Continue, DJ.
Thank you very much.
DJ,
you're muted. My apologies, Honorable Chair. We can make that report available, and also we can also show that we've been able to pick up with a lot of services, including immunization, after the lockdown. And the main issue was the shifting of resources. But also people, because there was lockdown and people were also afraid to go into the facilities because of high risk of infection. And then the issue of the vacancy rate, whether we'll be able to lower that. I must just appraise the honorable members that in line with the NHI bill and also aligning our structure to what, once we have the NHI in place, how our structure should look like. We've had to revise the organizational structure of the department, and that structure is now with the Department of Public Service and Administration, and was signed off by the Deputy Minister and the Minister. So we're waiting for them. So we will be prioritizing the positions. However, I do want to mention that the cuts that we are getting, they are not getting better, they are getting worse. With the midterm budget policy statement, we lost close to 700 million. As a department, and we've been told that it's going to be cut in the MTF, and most of the cuts are actually on compensation of employees. So we will need to be really looking at what is critical in terms of filling those positions. It's something that's very difficult to deal with, because we do give in our own inputs into Treasury, but they just top slice just throughout the department to address those issues. I will deal with those honorable co-chairs. And then I would like to hand over to Dr. Gail Andrews, our COO, then our CFO to deal with financial issues, and then Dr. Anban Pile to deal with the other issues. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, DJ. Just before you hand over, our slot is booked till 1 o'clock. So if by one we're not finished with the answers, I will request that we receive it in writing by Friday at 12 p.m.
We will do so, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, DJ.
Dr. Andrews?
Yes, thank you, DJ. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and DM. I'd just like to pick up on some key questions, and then I would like to leave some time for the CFO in particular, because a number of questions relate to his area of work. With regard to my area of work on information systems, I'd like to speak also answer on Honorable Guahube, where In particular, she referred to the fact that I mentioned that we had 45 million patients by the end of the financial year under review in our registry, in our patient registry. Now, just in order to simplify it, the health patient registration system, which we have created, uses the unique patient identifier, which in our case is the patient, our South African ID or an equivalent document like a passport if it's somebody who doesn't have our SA ID. And the HPRS also created this patient registry, which we refer to also as the Master Patient Index for the country. And it is within this HPRS system that more than 50 million people have been registered. But the system is going to go beyond just being a registry of patients. And yes, some data has been imported because it was easier than going facility by facility registering patients. But the achievement of 50 million people currently is quite a big achievement. In addition to the HPRS, we have a digital health strategy, as I said, that aims to establish an electronic health record. Also to answer Ms. Chris, Honourable Member Christians, who asked that, who also referred to this issue. Now, the electronic health record will have to be established from an integrated information architecture for interoperability, which is not something we achieve overnight. So over the past few years, we've been working towards multiple achievements related to various aspects of our strategy. But this architecture for interoperability and the electronic patient record or the electronic health record will ensure safe sharing of patient health information across health systems and across health services. And we may not in my lifetime move even to a complete paperless system, but that is the trajectory we were on. And I think COVID clearly showed that we had the capability to create interoperability among a variety of systems, linking lab data with patient level data, etc. Also even linking our provider registry data with lab data, and hence we can, one of the honorable members could say here that our infections amongst health workers is amongst one of the five highest in the world. So a key component also is that we've achieved was the review of our 2014 Health Normative Standards Framework for Interoperability. We've completed that review, and it is now awaiting final approval in the National Health Council next year. This is all going to go a long way to ensuring that existing systems can be interoperable and we move steadily towards our electronic health record. And then the next thing I would like to respond to is that the AG, according to Honorable Member Dianti, the AG said that the data that was given the report that was presented to the honorable members by the AG said that our performance information is not accurate nor reliable. Now, I wish to point out that we have a very structured way in which we manage health information. So every health service area, be it maternal health, child health, etc., we have data elements that are collected by means of a set of registers, and these registers have standard definitions in our national indicated data set. And on a daily basis, unfortunately, it's a paper register, but on a daily basis, this information is then transcribed into our electronic systems where these exist, either in real time or sometimes through offline systems. And then on a monthly basis,
we validate that data, which has been captured by data capturees at facility level, and the facility manager signs off after that data is validated or verified. From the facility, it moves to the district, where the district has to also ensure that the district manager verifies the data and signs off, and then it goes to the province. Now, at the provincial level, where there's an aggregation of data, district level data from various districts, data again undergoes validation, and only once it has been validated does the HOD sign off, and it is then pushed through to into our national system, and it is that data which we then use for reporting. Then I just want to say, honorable members, recently in the 2019-20 year, for the first time, the audit, the AG wanted us to introduce a process of reconciliations at